China is facing what seems to be a perfect storm in the tech sector this year. Even the big guys like Alibaba. They're dealing not only with the U.S.-China trade war, but also a slew of homegrown problems. Tumbling stock prices have wiped nearly $500 billion from the value of the country's top listed tech firms this year alone.
At just under 19 carats, the Pink Legacy is considered a work of art. It's graded vivid, the highest rating for pink diamond's color. And experts say most pink diamonds of this quality usually weigh less than 1 carat. The winning bid broke world records at a cool $50 million. That sale went to American jeweler brand Harry Winston. The company quickly renamed the diamond the Winston Pink Legacy.
The Venezuelan government recently rolled out a new version of a national ID card, the Carnet de la Patria, also known as the Fatherland card, used for everything from buying subsidized groceries to signing up for healthcare. But the card is now raising alarm bells. President Nicolas Maduro's government hired the controversial Chinese telecom giant ZTE last year to build a database linked to the card.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's November the 15th, 5:11 in the morning. Here we are with another edition of the opening bell and another business day getting underway. Lots going on this morning around the world and right here at home in Chicago. We'll have the latest on the markets in a minute. It's also Thought Leader Thursday here on the opening bell. Rod Murray will be here from Associated Bank. And a little bit later in the program, more on the Amazon decision to locate the second and third headquarters, if you will, and perhaps even the third and a half headquarters in Long Island and in Virginia and in Nashville. We'll talk about what more this means for Chicago. What did we do wrong or perhaps do right? That'll be at about 5:40 this morning here on the opening bell. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. And we begin in Europe this morning, where markets are falling and the sterling is tumbling after an appearance by the prime minister there before Parliament. Theresa May telling Parliament that divorce deal, the Brexit deal with the European Union, is one that includes the right choices, not easy ones. May addressing the Parliament after a flurry of resignations from her government this morning by ministers who are opposed to the deal. The departures include the Brexit secretary, have undermined May's authority and her ability to get the deal through Parliament. Opposition leaders say they have no intention of supporting the deal, especially if it gives the European Union a veto of sorts over whether or not the UK actually moves out of the European Union and some of the specific steps that the UK would take to do that. This morning, the FTSE has moved lower now by just a fraction, but everything else in Europe is lower by about 0.25% to 0.5%. The FTSE off about a point now, the DAX in Germany down about 13 points. The CAC in France moving lower now by about 21 points. Around the globe in Asia, markets are generally higher. Lots of green on the markets there. Hang Seng is up nearly 2%. The Shanghai is up nearly 1.5%. And in the U.S., futures are pointing toward opening gains a little bit later on Wall Street. Dow futures up 0.25%. NASDAQ and S&P futures up anywhere from 0.25% to 0.5%. And oil is at $56.14 a barrel this morning. Couple of stories before we begin this morning. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell claiming the U.S. economy is strong, but he's concerned about headwinds next year. Powell spoke in Dallas at a Q&A event where he said there are challenges, including slowing growth abroad, fading fiscal stimulus, and the lagging effect of 8 rate increases in the past 3 years. President Trump has been critical of Powell and the Fed for raising rates and has said that they are slowing down the economy. Powell says they are committed to serving the public in a nonpartisan, professional way. He did say that they're looking carefully at what impact the rate increases are having on the economy. It's expected that the Fed will raise rates again coming up in December. And the airline industry expecting a record number of travelers this Thanksgiving. The Trade Group for Airlines for America has released its annual Thanksgiving travel forecast and expecting a record number of holiday passengers. Expecting over 30 million people will travel on U.S. airlines during a 12-day window around Thanksgiving. Let's begin this morning with Thought Leader Thursday. Rod Murray is here. Rod is the Chicago Market President at Associated Bank. Rod, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
We sit here today to a couple days after the latest jobs report, 250,000 jobs created last month. The economy is still cooking along. It's a tight job market. What are you hearing out there from the CEOs and CFOs that you rub shoulders with every day?
Sure. And on top of the job creation, there was some wage growth. So that's good positive news in line with the numbers. But the CEOs and the CFOs are still seeing it as a challenge to attract and retain talent. It's the number one challenge across the board. When you ask what keeps you up at night, what is your biggest worry, by far that is the number one complaint.
What is the thinking outside of the box that's helping them? What are their strategies? What are some of the successes?
So you kind of hit it on the head by saying out of the box. You have to think out of the box. And whether that's going to, if you're a manufacturer, distributor, and saying, all right, well, I can't just use my old model. I have to figure out the technology side of things, even though I might be a blocking and tackling type company, to attract and retain talent, technology for your ordering, for your inventory, for your sales side of things, doing different thinking outside of the box to allow for flexibility if it's something that's needed, training. No longer do you have the path saying, here's your career path. It's from A to Z. That model's gone. So, and if you're still using that model, you might get left behind. It's more of what can you do to innovate and integrate my company?
And also the you mentioned the flex time part of that. Instead of being able to give bonuses, the companies are now having to pay money. They're having to pay salaries, higher salaries, also perhaps even give more vacation time, things to attract those new workers.
Sure. Work-life balance is important to the generations that are coming up and even the generations that have been here for a while. So that's one of the non-compensatory perks.
We are watching earnings very carefully, listening to earnings, different earnings reports, CEOs not talking a lot about future plans. Are you seeing some hesitation? Because I know the last time you were here, we talked a little bit about this. Companies not pulling the lever on future plans yet.
Yeah, there's still that uncertainty. And, I'll reference a company I was meeting with yesterday, the CEO and CFO, and they say things are going great. We think things are going really well. We can forecast on the short term very well, but longer term, there's still a lot of unknowns, whether that's if you're involved in the tariff stream, if you're involved in what might happen with the dreaded R word that keeps being forecasted out there for anywhere from an 18 to a 24 to a 36 month period.
And what is that? What are they telling you that is?
So, that dreaded R word of the pullback recession.
Right.
And there's just, they'll sit on their inventory, they'll build liquidity, and that's good. Earnings are still strong. We see it with the public companies that pull out. Earnings are strong, cash is strong in the big companies, but capital expenditure wise, where you're doing some M&A or things that really drive, the ship for the economy, which is building structure, whether that's equipment or buildings and then hiring for growth, those are less certain than the other side of things.
Did companies do too much in the way of stock buybacks and not enough in capital expenditures with the tax cut?
Yeah, a lot of people would argue as such that there wasn't enough, putting it back into the company, so to speak. I think that selectively, you definitely could look at that and say that's a criticism of companies across the board. Too much stock, it really doesn't do anything, right? It's window dressing. So I would agree with that statement. Not every single company, but in whole, yes.
Mm-hmm. What is the Fed's decision? How is the Fed playing into this in interest rates?
So I would certainly think that it's, December is probably baked, given the jobs report and the wage growth. Like we said last month, the trick or the key to the Fed will be, can you control the economy without crashing it? And right now, all the data that's coming out would support what they've been doing and what the forecast is that they'll be doing.
Do you think that there's been too much criticism of the Fed for moving forward on raising rates?
I don't know if there's been too much criticism. It's not so much with, raising the rates. You can't really criticize when you look at these data analytics, at these numbers. It's more of what's the rhetoric that's behind it. What is the you know, the words that are stated when this happens, or in the meetings that are in the in between the meetings, when just the statements that are being stated, what's the messaging that they're controlling? So I don't know that there's been too much criticism. I don't think that you can just run that, though, and say we're going to do it through the end of the year. It's going to happen. You have to look at it, I think, quarter to quarter to quarter.
We talked earlier about attracting and retaining talent as being one of the pressing issues that's out there. There are a couple of others, too, in the recent survey of businesses that I'd like to touch on this morning. And I know these are ones that we've talked about this year already. But digital transformation, this area that there needs to be some sort of radical change, some reinvention inside of companies. There was the disruption part of that. But that this is what we're talking about inside the company, what they're doing for themselves that's away from disruption. How big of a pressing issue is getting this part of it down?
Yeah, so digital transformation is not about purchasing technology or having the technology. It's how you leverage that technology. So that's what is the most important to a company's success or lack thereof, is how you transform your organization with that technology. Better insight, better analytics, and then how you manage as such.
And so give us a sense of, like, for instance, at Associated, how would this be playing out in real life at Associated?
Sure. Gosh, every day. You know, whether it's keeping ahead of the fraud, with having the fraud tools that are happening, giving consumers the best digital numbers or transformation of how to manage their money, control their money, access their money. You know, our IT folks and our digital retail folks are constantly trying to stay, you know, years ahead of that, because as soon as you think you have it down, you have to be ready and be flexible to change. You have to be very nimble on your feet. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the digital disruption, because we don't know. I mean, a bank, just like every other company, you don't know where the next Uber's coming from.
Yeah.
That can disrupt your company. So you have to be always thinking about three steps ahead.
And it's funny you brought that up, because that's instead of talking about the effect of disruptive technologies that it has been having, I wanted to get your thoughts on, well, what's the next thing going to be? Do you have any sense of what the new disruption is going to be?
Gosh, I wish I did, because I'd go invest in it. But no, I don't know what the next disruption is going to be, but I know that there's folks out there constantly thinking about how to build the better mousetrap, right? So it's coming. And in banking in particular, we've talked about things before about FinCEN, FinTech. We've talked about different micro lending. You know, there's non-banks that are doing things. So everything's, you know, happening in the digital age, and for us, we just have to stay ahead of it so that our offering is as good or better than the next person. But also, I think the most important thing that we can't lose sight of is the customer service part of things. You can have the greatest digital pieces in the world, but if your customer experience is not good, then that's not going to be something that's sustainable long term.
I think this, if I were in the C-suite, I think this is what would keep me up every night, would be looking over my shoulder. What's coming next? What is going to be my new challenge that I don't even know what it is tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And because of that, there's, recently we're seeing a few more clients who are maybe at that age, who are baby boomers, who are looking at that next step and might be trying to pull the trigger a little bit earlier, because they don't know what that is. They don't know what's looking over their shoulder. And when I say pull the trigger on selling their company. So there's a little more activity in that side of the shop as well, privately held businesses are looking to sell a little more actively than we'd seen here recently.
I was also struck by this report that talked about the state of innovation globally and here in the United States, that we're not innovating as much, or it just doesn't feel like we're innovating as much. Do you get that sense, and how dangerous can that be?
Yeah, I do get that sense, and I used to not as much until I had a few meetings. We have some clients who are owned by, have a foreign parent, and some of the questions they were asking and some of the things that they're doing, you know, with their companies, you know, made me kind of pause a little bit and then look at it a little bit broadly scope. I think we're a little bit behind in that. Some of it is that we're a little bit, not as we're not the number one ease of doing business in the mm-hmm. in the world anymore. You know, we're still in the top 10, but we've slipped a little bit. So I would agree with that statement. We're still the greatest, you know, economy in the world, don't get me wrong, but we definitely have slipped a little bit on the technology side.
What could we do to change that, do you think?
Great question. It's, you know, getting rid of the red tape. You know, that's the one thing when you look at the different surveys or the different boards that come out on these rankings, the biggest criticism for the U.S. is just the amount of red tape.
Mm-hmm. I know some of that has changed with the new administration. Perhaps more is coming on the way. Let me ask you to look forward into the crystal ball. How much of this is going to change next year?
I think that very little will change next year, but maybe we'll start to have the blueprint for what it'll look like mm-hmm. next year, you know, in the coming years. While some of this stuff, like we talked about, can happen instantaneously, when we talk about large-scale world global economics, that's not going to happen overnight. So maybe the blueprint comes out sometime next year toward the end of the year, but I don't think that we'll see those significant changes.
Rod, great conversation as always. How can people have this conversation with you one-on-one if they want?
Sure, they can reach out to me with an email or a phone call. My email is rodney.murray@associatedbank.com, and my phone is 312-544-4515.
Okay, we'll see you next time.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Rod Murray is the Chicago Market President at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation every Thursday here on The Opening Bell and more at WGNradio.com. We'll continue our conversation with Rod after the bell and post that in the podcast of the program a little bit later on this morning. And remember, you can also head over to associatedbank.com/thought leadership to meet more of our thought leaders and hear more conversations there.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. By now, you probably know Chicago's not getting Amazon's second headquarters. What are the lessons learned, and how do we move forward from here without HQ2? We've been getting some Chicago perspectives over the last day or so, and we want to bring in Eric Sedler this morning, managing partner and founder of Kivit. Kivit, a strategic communications and public relations firm, public affairs firm, headquartered right here in Chicago. Eric, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I want to start first by getting your reaction to the news, your thoughts on the Amazon headquarters going elsewhere.
Well, to me, the headline for Chicago is that everything I'm going to say is based on published reports. To me, the headline for Chicago is that we probably were number three or four in the search. And if you look at the whole situation, you have 238 cities that initially submitted bids. And at the end of the day, we know that as recently as last month, Amazon only came back for second visits to three locations, to New York, Newark, and Chicago. And there was some follow-up, apparently, with Miami and obviously with D.C. So, of course, it would be great, from my perspective, had Amazon come to Chicago. But I think that there are a lot of very, very positive outcomes that we can point to. Certainly, there are a few lessons learned. I think everybody understood that if we had any sort of drag on our bid, it was related to the issues of city and state government. And when you look at the reports that Amazon apparently required some kind of commitment from the governors of New York, the governor of New York and the mayor of New York, that they basically had to say, we're going to get along here, that it does show you that having government work together and be well-functioning did matter to Amazon. But if we put that important point aside, and we look at the fact that, as I said, Amazon only came back for second visits to three cities. Chicago was one of them. That we were clearly in the top, arguably the top three to four finalists. And I think that it gives us a lot of momentum and a lot of opportunity to move forward here.
And not only moving forward, but moving forward together in a way that a lot of different stakeholders came together for this bid, came together working with, in some cases, different interests, all moving together as one. That's a good thing in any case, but especially if you're trying to land something big.
Well, I agree. I think that just to give credit where credit is due, I thought Danny Ecker at Cranes wrote a great piece, I think yesterday, where he made the point that there were really probably four development sites that were realistically had potential to land Amazon. And one of the great outcomes of this process is those development sites have those developers got themselves organized. They put aggressive plans together, and now those sites are ready to be marketed to another major company. So while it's not going to be Amazon, certainly there are many other companies that are going to be looking for either corporate headquarters or major corporate locations. And we have at least four sites that are really, really premier locations that have marketing plans put together, that have use plans put together, and that are ready to go. And that was all done by the private sector. And I think that that's one of the most important outcomes here. And it did show that the Chicago real estate community, the city, and the state could work together and put a bid together. And so I do think that for all those reasons, there are some real there's a real benefit here. And again, to me, that's really probably the single most important outcome here, is that we now have multiple sites that are really, really premier corporate locations, and hopefully sooner rather than later we'll be seeing more activity about companies wanting to come to those areas.
Eric, how important is it for us now to sort of move forward, maybe even focus on some companies in Chicago? Maybe there's a startup here in Chicago that could be the next Amazon, or some other entity that could grow into something like that. Doubling down on efforts to grow from within, how important is that?
Well, I think there are two parts to that. First of all, let's not lose sight of the fact that there have been multiple announcements of major companies expanding in Chicago already recently. Facebook announced a 260,000 square foot lease. Google announced they're adding 100,000 square feet. There have been reports that Salesforce is talking to Chicago about a major expansion of up to 500,000 square feet. There have been other expansions. So, first of all, those things are already going on. And then, secondly, there are absolutely opportunities now for Chicago-based companies and companies that are already here to expand and to go into new areas. And we've seen examples of this already. We saw the recent announcement of Walgreens moving from Deerfield downtown to the former post office site. And so I do think that this whole Amazon process put a bit of a spotlight on the opportunities for companies to look at Chicago and to see the kind of premier development sites that we have in this city. And so I think we would all be excited about seeing Chicago area companies or Chicago-based companies looking at these sites and coming to the market. And as I said, I think the great news is that we know that these sites are really ready now, and hopefully that will create great opportunities.
I think something that Howard Tallman, the former CEO of 1871, wrote yesterday in the Tribune jumps out. He says, you're really never really out of the game unless you wallow in regret more than dream big. Chicago's dreams are alive and well. That seems like a positive step, positive words to move forward on.
Yeah, I agree. The mayor said it somewhat more succinctly, maybe, when he said, you know, if you don't compete, you can't win. And so, again, I don't think anybody, you know, loves the fact that we went through the process and we came up short in that respect. But, again, I think at the end of the day, Chicago was clearly in the top five, and there's just no question about that. And so I think it gives us a lot of momentum. I think, as I said, it establishes a lot of clear direction in terms of the kind of premier sites that are available for corporations to have in Chicago, whether that's Chicago-based companies, Chicago-area companies, or companies from elsewhere. And so, again, there's no question that we can look back at this process and say that the real estate community worked closely together, the city worked closely, the state worked collaboratively as needed with the city, and so all the different, and the civic community, the business civic leaders in the city coming together. And so there is a lot to look at and say that Chicago really put together a first-class bid, and that we have hopefully some very, very good momentum in the near future here.
Eric, we always appreciate your perspective. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Great. Thanks for having me. It was great to talk to you.
Eric Sedler, managing partner and founder of Kivit, the Chicago-based communications and public affairs firm.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street. Dow futures up 0.25%. Same story for the S&P. NASDAQ futures up 0.5%. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we looked at the grain market yesterday, soybean futures moved higher thanks to a slower-than-expected harvest pace and news of fresh export sales. Sales of 148,000 tons of U.S. soybeans to unknown destinations for the past 2 days, we've gotten that report. So at the end of the day yesterday, the November soybean contract was up 4.75 cents. December corn was up just 0.25 cents. And December wheat traded down 4 cents a bushel. Then we look at livestock yesterday at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Live cattle slipped on weak cash market outlooks and lower beef prices. The December live cattle contract down a dollar. The November feeder cattle contract managed to squeeze out a 7 cent gain, closing at $149.05 a hundredweight at the end of the trading session. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Thursday, November 15th, a lot on the calendar today, a full morning of economic reports as well, retail sales, import and export prices, and the weekly count of first-time unemployment claims all coming out. Analysts forecasting 214,000 initial claims for jobless benefits, the same as last week's report. Retail sales experts looking for a 0.5% gain in sales last month, and Smart Money is betting on a 0.1% pickup in both import and export prices. September business inventory is also out. The prediction calls for 0.3% increase. Also on the calendar today, a couple of Fed speakers out there, Neil Kashkari among them. We'll also get a look at business inventories as well. And also today, a couple of earnings on the calendar, including with that are NVIDIA, Nordstrom, Walmart, Manchester United, all reporting earnings today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, November the 15th.